Good morning, everyone. Today, I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee to order on Thursday, March 7th. There is a quorum present. I would like to ask Vice Chair Hewitt, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
Madam Chair, I have, and so moved.
Okay, is there any discussion to the March 5th minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes of March 5th are adopted. Before us today, we have Chair Nelson. It's so good to have you in state and local government. I will move House File 4339 we'll lay the bill over, but the bill is now before the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill is a fairly simple bill. It's brought to me by Hennepin County, and it has to deal with their set-aside construction projects. And what they're trying to do is tweak the requirement that on this bill to allow construction companies doing business with the county to be able to use people that are in public assistance or probationers, get them into construction jobs. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mike here from the county, and he can explain the bill.
If you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Rosenfeld. Mm-hmm. I'm with Hennepin County. I manage the negotiated procurement within the county's contracting and procurement department. This proposal is rooted in the county's desire to have an additional tool to promote hiring and on-the-job training for residents under court supervision, such as probationers, in county construction projects. The county wants to use its set-aside contracting authority with construction firms that agree to employ these residents as apprentices on county construction projects, where they will receive on-the-job training and have a career pathway into the building trades. What prevents the county from using the current Section 383B authority for this purpose is the requirement that the majority of the construction business's employees must be people who would require public assistance or rehabilitative services in the absence of the set-aside contract. We don't believe any construction business can meet that requirement. So this requirement has been met by nonprofit social service organizations with whom the county has contracted, but it simply doesn't reflect the realities of construction firms, the majority of whose employees have specialized training, and depending on the nature of the work, they may be licensed in a particular trade. So what the bill does is it creates a unique eligibility criteria for the county to set aside contracts with construction firms. And that criteria aligns with the objective of using some county construction projects as a platform for probationers to be working and receiving on-the-job training. My colleague, Logan Futterer, manages the county's community productive day program within the county's corrections department. And Madam Chair, with your permission, Mr. Futterer can provide a brief description of how he manages that program and how that program works with the Carpenters Union and through journeyman carpenters to train probationers in basic carpentry skills. In closing, the county sought this legislation to enhance its ability to place more participants from Mr. Futterer's program within the workforce of the construction firms that are delivering county construction projects. And I would be happy to answer any questions from any members of the committee now or after Mr. Futterer's remarks.
Fine. If you'd like to come forward, that would be fine. Thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. If you would please state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Logan Futter. I am as Michael said, I'm the Productive Day Program Manager at Hennepin County. The Productive Day Program is a paid employment training program for people supervised by Hennepin County, and they're on probation and parole. We have a on-the-job training program where our participants are supervised and directed by five journeyman carpenters with a fifth day of classroom education that covers a wide range of topics: cognitive skills training, financial skills training, employment readiness, as well as union-developed carpentry curriculum. currently, our focus is mainly on rehabbing tax forfeited properties, so it's a lot of residential work. This bill would allow us to expand, to expose our participants to more commercial-focused carpentry, which we don't have a lot of access to. It would also expose them to working alongside potential future employers, which our end goal being getting them into union employment and working with directly for these companies working on these county projects. We're also looking to expand to potentially work with the laborers union as well moving forward.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Chair Nelson, is there anything more that you'd like to say before we take it to discussion?
Discussion's fine.
Okay. And as members, do you have any questions, issues, concerns that you'd like to discuss? Seeing none, would you like to close the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And again, this is a program that, by tweaking this program, it would allow these people to get into good-paying construction jobs. One of the big drawbacks for people on rehabilitation or probation is getting a good job. And with a good job, they're not going to fall back into their past problems. So that's what this bill does. It allows these construction companies, or it would allow these people to get into construction companies and construction work, and again, move on with their lives and better their lives.
I'm sorry, Chair Nelson, I did not see that there was an A1 amendment. Is that your amendment?
Oh, yes, there's an A1. I'm sorry, I forgot the button. Yeah, there's an A1 amendment, and it just basically adds to deliver to the set-aside contracts. And it just a little tweak to the...
All right. Thank you for bringing that. So the A1 is before us. I move that the A1 be before us. Members, was there any discussion to the A1? All those in favor of adoption of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The bill is amended with the A1. Thank you. And then we will lay the bill over for future consideration. Thank you very much, Chair Nelson. Representative Kozlowski. Oh, there you are. Thank you. I will move House File 4193 to be re-referred to Capital Investment. The bill is now before us. Representative Kozlowski, if you'd like to tell us about your bill.
Great. Thank you, Chair Claiborne and members. Juju, Ozawa Anakwad, Magizin and Dodame, Leish Kozlowski, Jagamashimo. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 4193. This is a bill that will rematriate the Cloquet Forestry through a land transfer of certain state-owned lands to the University of Minnesota to its original caretakers. In 1909, the Cloquet Forestry Center, which sits wholly within the Fond du Lac Band's tribal boundaries, was established on 2,000 acres, and it continued expanding until 2003, where it sits at its currently 3,400 acres. The center is, as I mentioned, wholly and uniquely situated within the borders of the tribal community, and the center has been the primary research and education for the University of Minnesota. However, this land was originally reserved for the Fond du Lac Band under the 1854 Treaty of La Pointe. At the request of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, our leaders, alongside the university, has been engaged in regular and ongoing dialogue for years over this Cloquet Forestry Center. In 2020, the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council followed suit, which represents the governing body of 10 of 11 Minnesota's tribes, took action and passed a resolution asking for the return of the land. This bill before us today is one that is actually technical in nature due to its complex real estate process, in that the Cloquet Forestry land has both university as well as some parcels that are owned by the state of Minnesota. And so the goal of this bill is really to get it into one package for that continued and eventual transfer. So Section 1 is authorizing the Department of Administration to execute that title transfer to the regions of University of Minnesota to then transfer the Cloquet Forestry Center in its entirety to the band. I'll let our testifiers tell you lots more, and we'll get into the details and conversation, but I just want to say this is a really good day, and this is a really good another step forward in repairing and restoring and regenerating our homelands and our people. But also, it's good news for Minnesota because all that's going to change is a title deed in the band and the university, and through a public process that has been robust, will continue and actually strengthen and bolster the research that's been happening. There's a memorandum of understanding that's been reached. It's continuing to be worked out, and details continue to go forward, but this is going to be good news and a win-win-win. So look forward to the continued dialogue, questions, and to go forward in a good way. So I'll turn it over to our testifiers, Chair.
Thank you, Representative. And first on the list, we have Elise Roberts-Davis, Vice President at the University of Minnesota Services. If you'd please state your name for the record and begin your testimony, Vice President.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It is great to be back in state and local government finance committee. I'm Alice Roberts-Davis. I am Vice President for the University of Minnesota. And thank you for the time to hear House File 4193 today. And thank you, Representative Koslowski, for carrying this bill. Very briefly, Section 1 of House File 4193 transfers title of ownership of certain parcels of land within the Cloquet Forestry Center from the state of Minnesota to the University of Minnesota. This action is necessary to enable a complete final transfer of land from the university to the Fond du Lac Band. House File 4193 moves us forward in the spirit of collaboration and partnership with the Fond du Lac Band. And the university has had productive discussions over the last several months to create a framework to continue delivering on our research, education, and outreach capacities at the Cloquet Forestry Center. We are also exploring additional opportunities to bring a crucial tribal perspective to help broaden understanding and experiences in forest resources. The Cloquet Forestry Center has been the primary research and education and outreach forest of the University of Minnesota since 1909, and the Department of Forest Resources has delivered educational and research programs there since 1903. The university's focus is on ensuring that our faculty, research professionals, and staff have the tools and resources they need to help them deliver on our research, education, and outreach mission. We are confident that this step forward will result in a richer and more fulfilling forest resources program. And we are so thankful for your time for hearing House File 4193 today. We're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And we have one more member of the public who has signed up to testify. If I could ask Rick Horton to come forward, please. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
My name is Rick Horton. I'm the Executive Vice President of Minnesota Forest Industries. Chair Cleburne and members, Representative Koslowski said, in 1896, just 2 years after the Hinckley Fire, which burned up 12 communities, 350,000 acres, and killed 418 people, Professor Samuel Green and members of the forest products industry realized that they needed to change. They needed to develop a conservation ethic, and they needed a place where they could train future foresters and research how to heal the land. And so it took until about 1909 to fully see this vision come to fruition, and came about through the purchase of an initial 2,215 acres of unallotted tribal lands. From there, they purchased other surrounding lands. Some of them were allotted tribal lands, and those people were paid fair market value. They were paid for the timber value on the land, and they were offered other tracts to move to live on, and they were willing sellers. Other lands were purchased from settlers, and some were donated by other people. And this eventually came to be the 3,400 acres that we see now. And so now we've had 115 years of research and training thousands of foresters. And as a result, we have the beautiful, sustainably managed forests that we have today in Minnesota. That was critical to doing so. And, here we are with the specter of climate change looming over us, and we need to continue to do research so that we can figure out how to help our forests help us with climate change. They currently absorb like 14% of all CO2 emissions in the state. You know, the forest product sector is the only carbon negative sector of the economy, and we can manage our forests better to absorb even more carbon and store it. So, you know, we're asking that that this process be slowed down a little bit, because while there's been a lot of communications between the university and the tribe, it has not been that transparent with us and with other stakeholders in the community, and that's led to a fair amount of distrust and concern moving forward. You know, the local citizens do use that property to recreate, and they're very concerned about the transfer. But for us, you know, we really want to see it continue as is. And, you know, as Representative Kozlowski said, there's an MOU that's being developed, but we haven't seen it. There's been a complete lack of transparency through this whole process. And, you know, I think that the concerned citizens of the state should have a role in this process. Barring that, you know, we would like to remind you that the land was purchased. And if it's going to be transferred, we feel that it should be sold according to university policy, and those funds used to pay for the development of a new facility like this. Because long-term goal is not to continue this as a research facility forever. Eventually, it will transfer over. Trying to work out the details of what we can do together, but again, we're not at the table, and we have some deep concerns about it. So thank you for your interest.
Thank you so much, Mr. Horton, for your testimony. We appreciate hearing from you. And I understand there is one other individual who would like to testify. Mr. If you please come forward. Welcome to the committee, and if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Roger Smith, Sr. I am the District 3 representative and vice chairman for Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. And welcome, or good morning, committee.
Good morning. Please begin your testimony.
Madam Chair and committee, we look back on how this land was transferred, how it was gotten by the university, and we can certainly focus on the negatives, on how that was. We heard that talk about fair market value, and I don't think that's the case. When there's reports of paying $1.25 per acre, well, the appraised value was $10.88 an acre. And the allottees are even getting even less. Fond du Lac was made up of the 1854 Treaty of La Pointe, where it had created 100,000 acres for the Fond du Lac Band. The forestry takes up 3,471 acres, which is roughly 3% of the land base. We look at the MOU that we have with the university, and we're very excited to work with the university, to finally work with the university on some very important research. And I'll get to that in a minute. But when we look at the MOU, and within 2 weeks after we signed the MOU, we had a public hearing that was very well attended. And through this whole process, and this administration at Fond du Lac is to make things transparent, not only to our band members, but for our community. Because we realize the use of the Cloquet Forestry to the local area and the importance of the forestry of training future foresters. So, when we look at the importance of ongoing and in this relationship with the University of Minnesota, Fond du Lac is very, very excited about this relationship. Because as we look at our connection to the land, it is very important. That is who we are. That is part of our culture. that everything has a living being. And when we look at the trees and the medicines that lie within the forestry, it is very important to the Fond du Lac people. So when we look at the ongoing research, the research that has happened, and we are now in a partnership with the university, we're very excited. If we look at the winter that we just had and the importance of that research on what it does to the trees, just in itself, maple sugar trees, which is a very important staple to the Anishinaabe. And to have that research of how does that affect it on winters like we just have. So when we look at our connectedness to the land, to the trees, we're very excited about this. And when we look at the ongoing research, that is something that we want to be part of, to have that relationship with the university. And quite frankly, we're very excited. We look at our forestry department. Now, I started my young career as a forestry aide and working with our small forestry department in the beginning. And our foresters are very excited to get to work with the foresters at the university, because of what it will do is make a healthy forest, not only in the forestry, but throughout Fond du Lac. And I think the research that comes out of that actually makes a healthy forest for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate hearing from you. And I just want to acknowledge the Fond du Lac Band as a sovereign nation and your right and ability to enter into memorandums of understanding. So I just wanted to put that on the table as well. So thank you very much for your testimony. I want to make sure we have time to take a vote on as we go forward, and we have time for conversation. Okay. Next, we will move on. I don't see any amendments to the bill. Is that correct? Okay. Next, we'll move on to discussion of the members. Is there any discussion? Representative Nash, you have Representative Joy as well. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kowalski, for this. Couple questions. We hear memorandum of understanding. And, you know, as a legislator and a lawmaker, one of the things I like to see is the memorandum of understanding, so I understand how it's all going to look if we make these decisions. And I'm kind of surprised that we don't have that in here, so we could have looked at that and had the research of what the language is going to look like. You know, because when we're transferring land like this, and granted, we don't have a fiscal note on this yet, which I think is important to have, but when we're transferring land like this and we're trying to make a decision of how this is going to look in the future, I would have liked to have seen a memorandum of understanding so I could have said that. You know, the University of Minnesota is intent to continue the relationship for whatever, 50 years, 100 years, whatever, and continue this process, and this is how this is going to look. Now we're kind of sitting here in the dark not knowing what that's going to look like if we make a decision moving forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Kozlowski. I am pretty much in support of this this legislation. I do have a question. I have two questions. First, can you talk, and maybe this is University of Minnesota too. I'm probably one of the few people that actually went to the Cloquet Forestry Center. I studied forest ecology at the University of Minnesota, and I have fond memories of being up there studying silviculture, actually. So what is the plan in the MOU? Is the Fond du Lac tribe going to continue to have that forestry research center and history center up there for the duration? Is that the intent, or is it plan to be phased out at some time?
Representative Kozlowski.
Sure, and thank you so much, both of you representatives, for the questions. And in terms of the memorandum of understanding of the long-term plans, you know, obviously the U's here, I'll let them speak best to those conversations and future looking. I will say that the next step, to the point of fiscal note is going to the bonding committee. There is, I believe, we have folks who could speak to that too, but there is a defeasant that needs to be paid out with the bond. And as I understand, that's in the range of about $1 million. But when you, as Chairman Smith talked about, that's pretty statistically insignificant when you think about the funds that were acquired. And I would just also encourage our members to check out the Truth Report, which is over a 500-page document that was done in cooperation with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, the university, and many other partners that detailed the process and outlines of how this land was acquired through government policies and things that were enacted to erase and forcibly remove and then acquire this land at much lower than market value. For example, that report talks about how Dakota tribes were paid 2 cents per acre while the university sold, turned around and sold that for over 250 times the amount. We have a permanent university fund that is also managed by our state of DNR that in 3 years acquired off of the mineral rights from this land that was taken over $20 million and has amassed over $500 million. And so I just encourage us to have a really firm understanding, and we can talk about agreements. And as you mentioned, tribal nations have the ability and the authority to do that and enact their tribal sovereignty, but to really understand what we're talking about here and how this came to be. But I'll Chair, if I could turn it over to you to talk about the MOU.
And if we can just keep the conversation concise, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nadeau, I think that your question is a very good one, and this is actually what we believe is right in line with the mission of the university. We want to ensure that we have ongoing research and education and outreach for the university through the Cloquet Forestry Center, and having that tribal perspective is very important for us to continue that. And so the goal now is to continue on in a partnership with the Fond du Lac Band in the Cloquet Forestry Center research.
Thank you very much. And Representative Nadeau, a follow-up?
And just my follow-up question is, why is the University of Minnesota and the tribes, as they're going through this private, I mean, I know that this bill just transfers the title to the University of Minnesota from the state. Why should the state, this is a massive asset that has a lot of value, and I know I've heard that it's around $1 million to defease, you know, and prepay, you know, whatever debt, that why should we be covering that expense? Why is that not being covered by the university and or through the transfer itself?
Vice President.
Madam Chair, Representative, again, this is all a collaborative work that we're trying to do together. We're working collaboratively with the state, the university, the tribe, to make sure that we're just returning the property so that we can all work on the long-term research that's happening there, and each individual agency is doing its part.
Thank you. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, my side of the aisle took care of all my questions, so I'm just concerned with the lack of a fiscal note. We've talked about that again and again and again, and line 2.11 is an ellipsis. I don't have a box of dots, but...
It's unfortunate. I like dots.
I have one in my office. I could run and get it, but I just... Process matters, Madam Chair. And... Process will never stop mattering. So thank you.
Thank you. And as I said at the very beginning, this is going to be re-referred to capital investment, and they will be the committee responsible for the financial piece of this bill. Representative, are there any other questions or concerns? Okay, seeing none, Representative Kozlowski, if you would like to close up your bill, and then I'll make a motion to re-refer.
Great. Thank you, members, for this conversation and questions. And as we move forward to the bonding committee, look forward to engaging in the dialogue. I'll just end by saying that, again, we're very excited to continue these conversations and this process. And as the band, as Anishinaabeg people, you know, we use the word Bizendawiye. And to the conversation that's been happening, we're not just looking out for our people, though this has left a hole that's felt and noticed in our tribal homelands that will restore our people, restore the land, but we are also taking care of each other in this place and our future seven generations. So thank you again for the opportunity, and appreciate your support in referring this to bonding. Thank you.
Thank you, and with that, I will renew my motion that House File, sorry about that, House File 4193 be re-referred to Capital Investments. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Yeah.
No. No.
The motion prevails, and House File 4193 is re-referred to Capital Investments. Next, we have House File 4310. Representative, our Chair Lilly, welcome to the committee. It's good to have you with us this morning. I will move that House File 4310 be re-referred to Ways and Means. The bill is now before us. If you would talk about your bill.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne and members and STAR staff. I'm a little bit jealous seeing Ms. Roberts there. She ditched us in Legacy, so you just don't know how lucky you are.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Okay. So, House File, she's going to not be happy with me, probably. Sorry. House File 4310 is a compensation plans bill that was ratified through the Subcommittee of Employee Relations. And the bill essentially is a bunch of plans, and I'll kind of just go through them, but then I have some real experts here with me. The commissioner's plan, managerial plan, the Office of Higher Education, unclassified personnel compensation plan, MNsure compensation plan, and also the 24 and 25 Minnesota State Administrator personnel plan. The plans that were negotiated through MMB cover about 2,960 employees. And the plan submitted through Minnesota State, our school system covers about 500 administrator. I have Nick with me here, and he can go into the bill with more detail. And then we have quite a bit of talent out there in the crowd, way in the back there. So if there's any questions that Mr. Nash or his team has or others, we're looking forward to that. So if you're willing, Madam Chair, we'd like to have Nick kind of take over.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne and members. I'm Nick Nigro with the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and our office provides staff support for the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. Included in your meeting materials is a summary of the plans that are ratified by this bill. There are more detailed summaries and the plans themselves online at the SER's website. A high-level overview is that among these five plans, the first four are negotiated through MMB, and those plans are largely similar in that each have a 5.5% increase in salaries effective last July and a 4.5% effective July of this year. They also include annual merit-based increases, generally at 3.5%, and on average, about half of the covered employees are eligible. So these plans do not add to the biennial base, but they will take out of the operating costs currently. For MMB, that's about $69 million. That's a 7.68% increase and an average of a 10.16% increase from the 24-25 biennium to the 26-27 biennium. And the insurance benefits, which include dental, health, disability, are initially bargained, and those are generally consistent across the plans. And then there is one plan that covers Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And that has a 2.5% increase July 1st of last year and again this year. And that also has a merit-based increased pool. And that will add $14 million to their biennium costs. And that's a 6.82% increase. And that's a 9.33% increase from the 24-25 biennium to the 26-27 biennium. Attached is a settlement sheet showing all of these estimated costs by MMB and Minnesota State, alongside the negotiated collective bargaining agreements. And those estimates indicate increased costs of all of them will be 7.75% in this biennium, with an impact of 10.53% on the next biennium. Madam Chair and members, that concludes my overview. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I know our friends from MMB are here if you have particularly technical questions. Thank you.
Thank you, and I would just like to take a moment to thank you and the Legislative Coordinating Commission for the great nonpartisan work that you do in helping us get these budgets and plans moving forward, so thank you. Any questions from the members? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Cleborn. When I was at the county, we had union negotiations, and sometimes they were simple, and sometimes they were difficult. And usually when there's a negotiations, the unions will come to the table with a list of wants and needs. And sometimes they are fulfilled, and sometimes they are not. And I'm just curious if there was anything during these negotiations that they came with a list of wants that ended up being compromised. I'm just curious if there was anything like that.
I believe we're trying to dial a friend.
I think Chairman Director Weber is going to address this.
Madam Chair, I'm Michelle Urich with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. I got married last summer, so the new name.
But, oh, my gosh, forgive me.
And Representative Harder, these are the compensation plans that are not collectively bargained, so they are not union-covered employees. So these are the plans, but MMB could, if you have questions specifically about if there was anything that they considered in the plans, MMB could bring that. But that it wasn't a collectively bargained agreement.
Thank you very much. And I think it's important to know that the Subcommittee on Employee Relations is a nonpartisan committee. I mean, it's a bipartisan committee. So, and these, I understand, went through with unanimous consent. Is that correct?
I believe we had some dissenting votes.
Oh, there were some dissenting votes. All right. Well, then I stand corrected, as I often do. Okay. Did you have a follow up? Thank you.
Thank you for the information, because things are done differently than what I'm used to. So thank you very much for that clarification.
Yep. Thank you so much. Any other questions? Representative Nadeau.
Just one really fast question. Do these kind of match similarly with the collective bargaining that was done within those agencies? My experience is only with, you know, county, and we have unrepresented people as well. And so we would negotiate with the collective bargaining, and then those unrepresented populations would very closely match what was bargained for. Is that the case here as well?
Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Chair Cleborn and Representative Nadeau. It is my understanding that there is quite a few parallels that were similar to the, you know, say, like the MAPE contract or the AFSCME with the, you know, the majority of public employees. But I'm going to pass to
Chair Cleborn, Representative Nadeau. There are obviously technical differences between the collective bargaining agreements and these compensation plans, but if you turn towards the salary settlement at the back of my summary, you'll see that the across-the-board increases in 23 and 24 are the same for both the collective bargaining agreements and then also the MMB negotiated agreements.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau? Okay, thank you very much.
That's a good question.
Any other questions? Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. So you've got an increase of 7.69 and for the 26-27 base a 10.41. How does that impact what everyone has been talking about, which is the some call it a structural imbalance. My side would call it a structural deficit. Can you help us work through that?
Lead Nash, I'd just like to remind you, the numbers are on the back side of our handout, and they're just a little different from the numbers that you put forward. But if you would be willing to answer the question, please.
Thank you, Chair and Lead Nash. So the contracts are on the front end are baked in to be absorbed into the you know, the budgets that we passed. So essentially, you know, going forward. But then in the future, yes, there will be additional expense or you know, to cover our amazing talent that we have in the state. That no, but I mean, we'll have to be realistic about changing the budgets, because it is, and that's time. You know, you have to factor that in with every pay raise.
Lead Nash, is there further questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And irrespective of what numbers may be, the yeah. Chair himself just acknowledged that we're looking at a structural deficit, and the Walz administration has pointed that out in the different briefings. Economists are talking about it. The Chair has talked about it now. Decisions that we make here have to be considered, and I think that we need to look at every nickel we spend moving forward this year of the biennium with that in mind, because money only comes from one place, and that is the taxpayer. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And is there any further discussion? Would you like to close up the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for looking at this. And I think it is important to, you know, to we're seeing this with employee. I was on Ways and Means yesterday, and we're seeing that retaining staff and having employees in Minnesota is an important factor. And unemployment's very low, and we need to make sure that we're retaining our talent. And we are one of the best-run states in the country. And you know, these plans cover our college system. I mean, how important is that for Minnesota? You know, it is managers, but they're also part of the team that's making sure that our future is bright. And there's many other plans in here, so I shouldn't just focus on just that. But I think the future is, I think in any business, you know that if you do raises, you know that your increases, that that's going to be factored in, and you need to plan for that. So I think we are as a state, and I think we're in good shape, and I look forward to your support, please.
Thank you very much. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 4310 be re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 4310 is re-referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We have a need to take a 5 minutes or so recess, as the next bill author is also presenting in another committee. So while we wait for the representative to arrive, we'll just be in recess. We expect it to be 5 minutes or so. Thank you. We are currently in recess.
Yeah, so, the commercial.
I know. It's I got really sick, and then I got stupid busy.
You know, it's a funny thing. You can tell everybody that. When I was trying to figure out what kind of chair I wanted to be, right?
I might know a few things about that. I was your vice chair. Right now, I get yelled at for being too nice.
I can't do it in the morning. I can't get up there. So where are you going to go?
But not the Michelle Kelm program.
I don't know.
She was the chair of the MSFA and we uncovered that she was using position.
If you think I'm standing, yes.
Didn't go well for her.
Nothing is working.
Didn't go well for Rebecca.
Sliding downward. And I'm like, what is happening?
All the staff, when we were going after the state auditor, they have the best poker faces. Because there were some times that I know that I said some fairly outrageous stuff. And they just sat there.
I will say to you, when I first came in, it was nonpartisan. He said, look at all the chairs. See who you like.
Yeah, there's
a style matches your style.
And, you know, there has to be a process for
Chair Anderson came up with something.
She actually broke a gavel one time.
That's what I'm hoping to do. And also, I will say,
she did.
Just remaining flexible and having the energy.
Aggressive, get measured.
I don't have
years of debate.
Drinking water, getting in better sleep, eating healthy foods, and working out. And I have
And learn not to have
It is fluids. It's exactly the same to be hard. I'm trying to you're making all of your legs
We were supposed to.
Yeah, everything else
was before five.
Right.
Because we thought,
this floor, people like to see go at it. Okay, we'll focus on one thing on Monday.
That would be fun.
Break up with that.
And then, after it's all over,
and then continue drinking water. The next day, live with a little bit more sleep, and then build up until
it never happened. This is a one. Do you remember the Looney Tunes cartoons where the sheepdog and the wolf and their buddies as they're walking up to the clock, and then when they clock in, they have to go after each other? I describe it a little bit like that. There are fundamental things that we disagree on. We fight and debate.
We'll do
more. We're nice to each other later.
Right.
Most of the time.
Exactly.
Well, there was that one time.
I gotta try to get back in. My kid shows me how to use all the machines and how many reps and all of that, but then I lose it all. If I'm not in there for a couple of weeks, then I look at the machines and I'm like, I forgot how to use them. I don't know what I'm doing.
Actually, I use this app so heavy.
I go into my circuit of three. So if I go into my other three, it checks everything for me. It reminds me of little things. And so then it also lets me put the last time I did it, I bought one. I put this in for myself. It would show you the notes and I usually put a note in there. So I didn't see it good today, so I put it if you press on it, it shows you how to do it. Oh, it would be more to do it. It would be more to do it. Yeah.
So maybe like something like
He's getting ready to start his personal training courses, like for real. I'm like, that's what I'm like, oh no, if apps like that are happening, will he ever?
He will, because most people, like, once you get to this place, like, I think it took me quite a while to get good. My whole
He wants to.
Good for him.
But yes, he does. He does want to. I forgot it. Yeah.
You can't tell me it looks like that. Oh.
Nope. I know. That's why it's so funny. I know. Well, to be fair, that's when they're all so. After you, that's why he's all sweaty. So after you work out, you have your swole.
Yeah.
Is what it's called. That's when all of that looks like that. But I mean,
when did you start? How long did it take?
Probably 3 years.
Yeah, so when I worked out for like 6 months, like, why am I not?
Oh, I know. I work out for 3 hours and I'm like, why am I not sitting down? Like, seriously. I just worked out for. Right. Yeah, no, you can't tell that that's what he looks like, but it's funny to me because.
Does he want to be a personal trainer?
He does. Yeah. I love it. But he has put on.
Sorry, with the fringe on top? You got that?
And so I'm really.
Are we joining in a sing along?
Has that.
I think Jenny should lead us in show tunes.
Does he work like every day or just 7 days?
Every day, sometimes twice a day.
Wow.
We can't
like
do that. Well, he was doing regular workouts and then also boxing.
But I feel like the dancer might be more my spirit. I don't know if Jenny was on that one.
Matt can do the interpretive dance. I think you got this one.
I know.
Yeah.
Underneath that reserved shell is just a wild man begging to be let free.
You up for a duet, Matt? I think we can make it work.
I don't train for that. No.
It's like a full-time job.
Right.
I can't do that.
No.
I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have to be okay with
this. Right. Right.
So it's okay.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Daylight
savings
weekend. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'd be like, look at
why is it
you might
ranting.
Do that with me in clothes, but I've got kids.
Maybe his time is off. Maybe he's mis-scheduled.
Yeah, it's just all thrown off. Damn it, I don't know what time it is.
We do, 100%.
That's the thing about that. That's the thing. I'm going to do this to your body, but you're
going to... But you're going to have this amazing thing that will drain you of all your money and energy.
That's like across the hall.
I would probably not be rich.
You must be putting down the pile.
I'd be something.
I've spent $1 trillion on the
Okay, this is what I'll show you. Okay, so you remember what he looked like. So this was probably 4 years ago.
Wow, they were huge.
So, yeah, and then just, right? So like,
how old is he here?
He just turned 22, so
oh
he,
God,
was,
he was 13.
Yeah, I know. But you can sort of see the progression. This was in 2021, so he's 22 now, so he's 22. But he likes to...
Who's the lead?
kind of like that comparison. Yeah.
You know what?
It was the Republican. Give it to the Republican.
Like, I didn't take any pictures, and I'm regretting. But I see the and this is my trainer. My gym is a new trainer. Yeah. And like, we talk and stuff like that.
There. This is going to take a while, anyway.
And he's so good at it.
Yeah.
He's so. He's encouraging. He's just a little bit tough, and he'll push you, then he'll trick you. But it is always in such a really funny, uplifting way. So he'll be like, "Okay, so you're gonna do 10 reps of this," and I'm like, "Okay, so one," and then. I'll be struggling and I'll be like, okay, six, and he's like, you're on four. I'm like, no, I'm on six. He's like, four, five, six. And then another time, it was something where he was like behind me for some sort of a machine. He's like, okay, push through, you can do it. And I was like, eight. And he's like, nine. And he's like, okay, big push for 10. And so I did a big push. He's like, yeah, by the way, I was pressing down on 10. And he was pressing down to as the weight. I'm like, and then I was like, you cannot count. He's like, oh, I can count. And you meet somebody who's.
So, Amanda, are you a Nielsen person?
I do notice that.
Yes, my husband is a special.
But if I know somebody who's like me, then like, it does motivate me to push myself.
Cruiser.
Yeah, that's what I
have. I have now only two pair of their tin box hunting jacks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because somebody stole my first one.
Yeah, plus I'm brutally honest. Yeah.
The horse and hunt club jacks are off. When I came back, my gun was still there.
That was the younger one. The older one actually started going to
school.
You're invested.
Trainer.
I have a
vintage. He didn't vintage, care for the course. And so now he's like, I don't understand it. He like says, partners with cities or something or other to sell drones or whatever.
I had to replace my
they use it for so many things. Yeah, so he's trying to, he's like, okay, I've about as much pull there as you do as a person that lives in Hennepin County, so good luck.
Why would I worry about it?
He's like, you only turn my calls.
Literally, over the barrel of my gun. Which is like $2,200, and then my several $100 chassis, but how could it be unsafe? So.
Hey, do we have everyone in the room who needs to be in the room? That's the question. Okay, it looks like we're ready to. We resume. So I will call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee back to order. And with that, I will move that House File 3938 be before the committee. And I understand that you have a DE1. Would you like to welcome to the committee, Representative Curran. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, if you would like to maybe tell us about the bill and then discuss the DE1. Thank you.
Sure. Could we maybe move the bill first? Mm-hmm. Would that be okay?
Yes, I will move House File.
Move the DE.
That's
first.
Fine. I will move House File 3938 to be re-referred to the Health Committee. The bill is before us.
Okay. Sorry, I meant move the DE first.
I thought I already had done that. Sorry.
Okay. All right.
I will move the DE before us for discussion. Thank you.
So this DE is just technical assistance to put the language in the correct sections. So it's essentially same language, but just restructured a little bit. And so I'd ask that members vote in favor of the DE.
Okay. So the normal custom is to have the bill in the order that the author would like to have it in.
Yes.
So members, is there any discussion to the DE1? Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE1, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 3938 is amended with the DE1. Your bill as amended is now before us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you so much, committee members. In front of us today, we have House File 3938 amended. This bill is brought forward by ARM, which is the Statewide Trade Association of Residential Service Providers Supporting People with Disabilities. This bill would exempt group homes specifically licensed under Minnesota Statute 245A from being regulated under a city, town, or county's rental regulations. I will note that this does have bipartisan support in the Senate as well. The need for this bill came from a growing trend of cities using their local rental regulations to keep group homes from coming into their cities or forcing them out of neighborhoods. And before I move on, I just wanted to address some of the oppositional letters that have been received by the committee and posted to the public. I'll refer to a letter from Metro Cities, and you know, while I appreciate that there's intention to protect the safety of residents in the community, I just want to point out that over the years there's been a shift in how we operate in this space. When we implemented the positive supports rule accompanying 245D licensing regulations years ago, you know, we went from this place in the past where people had a tendency to want to put folks with disabilities in a bubble and protect people from everything, which, you know, we understand that when someone's vulnerable, we need to take extra caution to ensure the person, you know, isn't in risky situations. However, there is something that exists that's called dignity of risk, and we need to think about when we, for our own comfort, are afraid to let someone who's vulnerable experience the world just as any of us. That's out of our own fear oftentimes, and we need to have people live as full life as possible. Now, that doesn't mean that we're exposing people to danger intentionally. What it means is that we need to sort of let go sometimes when we feel uncomfortable where someone else is in a space that actually might be just fine for them. And so there's been that shift. And so, like I said, I understand and respect the desire to want to provide extra protection for people. But I think that's actually a misplaced feeling. And at this point in the disabilities field, that's an antiquated mindset. You know, and I've heard concerns too where people might have concerns with the staff at these locations. And I would say, staff of any employer, group home, Target, wherever, if that employee is not acting in accordance with the policies of that employer, they have to face employer consequences. They face workforce consequences. Should that employee break the law while they're working at the group home or at Target, they face criminal charges. And further, I would say that if employees are engaging in activities that are seriously egregious, criminal activities or violate vulnerable adult law, they very well might lose their ability to work in the field forever, depending on the severity of their actions. So I just want to make it clear that we have these other mechanisms in place that work very well, that are close to the people who are living in the program, close to the people who are working in these programs. And so you know, when we talk about a city rental license, in the world of disabilities, the city rental license is sort of this this small thing over here on the floor, like it's there, but you don't really, you know, pay much attention to it because there's all of these other mechanisms in place. And I would say, too, that just like anyone else in a community, we all utilize public safety in the way that we need to keep us safe for medical emergencies. If I'm someone who has a condition that requires an unfortunate amount of ambulance visits to my house, I'm not going to be evicted because of that, because I don't have a rental, you know, license imposed on me. Now, if someone in a residential facility is subject to an ordinance and is considered a nuisance for too many ambulance calls, they might very well lose their home on top of already being a medically fragile person. So I just want to, you know, sort of lay the foundation of what we're actually talking about here. And certainly not to disparage the intent of what cities are trying to do here. And I just want to note, too, on the latest letter from the League of Minnesota Cities, again, I appreciate the intent to ensure habitability and livability standards, mm-hmm. But there is a 13-page document that the state uses with, I've lost count of how many checkboxes that have to be gone through. And this is well beyond what any city would inspect at any property. And I am a bit concerned, honestly, with one section of the league's letter that says, through rental licensure, cities are often able to respond more quickly to address issues and concerns regarding the residents' livability, safety, and conditions of their housing. I'm concerned because that's actually pointing folks in the wrong direction for the correct assistance that they need. And I'm saying this in each committee that this bill goes to, that whenever somebody is concerned about the treatment of someone with disabilities, the appropriate place to contact is the Minnesota Adult Abuse Reporting Center, or as we call it in the field, the MARC. This is a call center. This is their sole purpose, to receive these complaints and to investigate them promptly and thoroughly. So again, I appreciate that cities, you know, want to be close to this issue, but to say that, you know, to respond more quickly is simply not accurate, and it's actually not the right mechanism to be using. We have to be using MARC for these reports that are concerns of resident safety. And I guess with that, I can turn it over to our testifier for more details.
Thank you, Representative. And with us today, we have Sarah Grofstrom. Thank you very much. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Sarah Grofstrom. I'm the Senior Director of State and Federal Policy with ARM, which, as Representative Curran said, is a trade association of disability service providers. Minnesota is having a long overdue conversation about the importance of everyone having a place to call home. House File 3938 seeks to address an emerging issue with state law that threatens the constitutionally protected right to live independently and in neighborhood of their choosing for people with disabilities. In recent months, we have seen news stories about cities revoking municipal rental licenses for various reasons, often ranging from neighborhood nuisance to overuse of emergency services. By revoking rental licenses, cities are de facto vetoing DHS's licensure process by telling the group home they cannot operate and repealing the rights of the people with disabilities living there by forcing them to find somewhere else to live. We've also heard troubling public comments from local elected officials, with one city council member suggesting Minnesota should go back to the long gone era of non-residential settings and, to quote, realize that not everyone can live next door in a residential setting. We have heard proponents claim to need rental licenses to protect the residents living in the homes. Thorough and extensive licensing regulations with the Department of Human Services are already in place with group homes throughout the state, making them some of the most well-maintained care settings available to Minnesotans who need them. In fact, many cities look at the state regulations that are already in place specific to group homes and use that as reasoning to carve out group homes from their residential rental licensing ordinance. by exempting residential programs and permitted single-family houses from municipal rental licensing regulations, we are helping to ensure that people with disabilities have the right and choice to live in whatever community they choose, get rid of a confusing patchwork of regulations which differ city by city, and retain the safety and quality standards which are already imposed by the Department of Human Services. Madam Chair, thank you again for the time this morning, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And we have one other testifier listed, Josh Berg. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Josh Berg, and I am here today in full support of this bill. I am a passionate advocate for individuals with disabilities and older adults, and I've been concerned about this specific issue for almost a decade. And I'm finally happy to see that this is finally getting addressed this session. I'm a leader at a St. Paul-based nonprofit, affordable, accessible housing provider, and I'm an ARM board member. I'm also in my 10th year as a city council member from the city of Elko Newmarket, an active member of the League of Minnesota Cities, and was appointed to the Metro Cities Board of Directors in 2021. As a local elected official, I am supposed to be up here reinforcing the idea that local control is the only way to go. That local control is critical to the ensuring the livability and safety standards for our communities. And that rental housing ordinances are supposed to allow cities to quickly respond to and address issues that are, in theory, designed to protect the safety of residents and the community. The simple fact of the matter is, though, there are robust state, county, and fire code oversight mechanisms already in place to address these issues. In fact, through these state licenses that these homes maintained, we are held to standards that often go far beyond what any rental license would ever require or protect against. Local control in this case does not add anything besides an opportunity for local governments to continue to discriminate against individuals with disabilities. Thankfully, many cities already exempt this from the rental licensing ordinances, if they do actually have one. I spoke to several council members and staff from the cities in the metro and around the state, and the resounding theme was, why would we waste valuable city resources to duplicate something another government entity is already doing? One council member from a large metro city stated it perfectly. Most of the exemptions in our rental licensing ordinance were derived in whole or in part from other metro area city ordinances that we reviewed. State statutes allow supportive housing of 6 units or less in any zone, and we are careful not to approve ordinances or policies that infringe upon that. Regarding other facilities that are licensed through the state, because the state is inspecting those facilities, we did not want our ordinance to be duplicative of state requirements. This is also the case for those cities represented on the League of Minnesota Cities and Metro Cities Boards of Directors. As those cities with rental housing ordinances, over 70% explicitly exempt state license settings like this. The problem, Madam Chair and members, is that most cities in Minnesota have no idea what we are doing in this area. I've now reviewed over 100 plus city ordinances and have found that there is essentially no consistency whatsoever as it relates to how, when, or if cities write and enforce rental housing ordinances. In fact, there is such outdated language in some of the ordinances in some of the cities that you all represent that it's actually kind of embarrassing we haven't been talking about this sooner. It appears many cities think it is appropriate to treat an individual with disabilities different than the rest of the residents in our communities. For example, most cities explicitly allow a state-licensed home that serves primarily older adults to not obtain a rental license, but the same state-licensed facility that serves folks under a certain age that are with disabilities, they're required to. Whether we at the local level like it or not, we need guidance. This is where local control turns into a statewide issue, and this bill will take one small but important step to correct. For the past decade, as I mentioned, I've been working to remove these NIMBY-driven policies and practices that prevent our fellow Minnesotans, those with disabilities, from living in communities they choose. Unfortunately, communities continue to find creative ways to use local control to limit where individuals with disabilities are allowed to live. I would like to just leave you with one last comment. I know many of you are aware of the work being done to help keep folks out of hospitals. This specific issue has been brought up at the Acute Care Transitions Advisory Council. I co-chair that council, and in discussions with DHS as one of the several significant barriers to finding housing and supports for individuals stuck in hospitals. These discriminatory local ordinances are one of the many reasons why individuals cannot find housing outside of the acute care settings that they are stuck in. Providers across the state who are in one of the cities that do require rental housing ordinances are often afraid to accept individuals with complex care needs. Forget about the mental health and behavioral care challenges that some individuals might have, because they fear the city could arbitrarily and capriciously revoke that license or permit based on any number of reasons. Let's finally take one step forward to give individuals with disabilities the option to live where they want to live and not allow discriminatory and unfair housing practices to persist in our communities any longer. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to testify on this bill? Right, seeing none, we'll go to member questions. Any Representative Nadeau?
Thank you, Representative Curran. I am supporting your bill with reservations today. I think you point out some incredible things, and we're trying to tackle an issue that's really difficult. A lot of people don't understand the complexity and the partnerships that are required. DHS licenses the services in these facilities. Local units of government are supposed to, you know, kind of work on the safety, health, and welfare of the facilities, but they also have a real role in, you know, responding to emergencies, dealing with the neighbors, and trying to be that partner. I worry a little bit that we're kind of legislating on the margin. I mean, as I know, there's only one real issue that's ever resulted in somebody being displaced, and honestly, for me, that's one too many. This is a population that's super vulnerable. They need to have these group homes, and there was evictions that happened, and it was a short period of time, like 30 or 45 days. That's not okay. I'm supporting this and hoping that you're going to continue to work on it. I think we need model ordinances that we can work with Metro Cities or other people to try to create that space that recognizes that the state legislature, agree or disagree, we've decided that that is a permitted use in residential areas, and we should, you know, and that's a good thing. And it's going to help those people integrate within the community, which is what we also want to happen. But this one, I'm going to vote for it today, but I hope that you'll keep working on that and recognizing that in many, many cases, and I know that the testifier alluded to, in some instances, there's some bad actors out there that might not want you know, populations like this living in their community, and I think that's super unfortunate, and we need to do some real work to educate those people. But I think, you know, as a whole, that's not the huge issue, but it's finding that balance between those partners, and local gov is an important partner in making sure that they have to look a little bit broader than just that one group home, or two or three in their community. They've got a larger constituency, so I'm hoping that we can continue to work on this and bring Metro Cities and we can find a little bit of space. So thank you for bringing it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Curran. I really do appreciate you bringing this forward. I will be honest, obviously in my role as the Vice Chair of the Human Services Committee, I know that owning and operating a group home is a very rigorous process. It is not something that happens lightly. There is a lot of rules, regulations, and oversight into that to ensure that these vulnerable adults are in a safe position. And so I appreciate that. And I'm also a family member of an individual with some severe disabilities. And so the exact clientele who would be in a group home. So I really appreciate and understand that. Now, if I'm not mistaken, my city, Maple Grove, does actually have an exemption for these types of facilities, which I'm delighted by. And my question, I guess, is a little bit around this, and then maybe a quick follow-up. But I understand that a lot of cities already have in place exemptions for these type of facilities. So I'm just trying to get sort of a handle on the scope of what we're doing here. Can you tell me about how many cities already have this exemption? I think you might have alluded to it, but could you refresh my memory?
Josh Berg?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Bonner. Yes, and the tricky part is there is no centralized location where all this information is had, so you have to go through city ordinance by city ordinance and pick apart which section of ordinance it might be in. But if we just look at this committee, I was able to look into it this last week. over 88% of the cities you all represent, and now there are some districts that have a ton of littler cities that I didn't dive into the details of all of those. Most of them don't have a rental licensing ordinance anyway, but over 88% of the cities you all represent exempt these types of settings or similar settings that are state licensed only or don't have an ordinance in place at all. And that's been the broad theme that I've been able to look at in the over 100 that I've looked at so far. So.
Thank you very much. Representative, did you want to say anything further?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I was going to point out the same information as Mr. Berg, but to further add to that, that considering that the large majority of cities represented here today in this committee are already providing the exemption, I think the takeaway from that is this is the right thing to do. And so we've still got a decent percentage of cities that are not consistent with the rest of the state. And so providing that consistency is what we're looking for across the state, so that folks, when they're looking for their home, aren't going to have to be worried about if ordinances are going to allow them to live there or not. So I would say this provides consistency and will get us to the place that we need to be where everyone's protected.
Okay. Did you have a follow-up? Or?
I just want to say briefly, I thank you for that information, the 88%. First of all, that's encouraging to know that and to appreciate that this bill kind of helps us close the gap and standardize that across the state. And I will just leave with this. You know, I can tell you in my neighborhood, I have a couple children with disabilities in the neighborhood, including a really lovely family who has a daughter with severe disabilities down the road. And it strikes me as odd that we would not want individuals, vulnerable individuals living in a group home, to have the same rights, privileges, and abilities as this lovely family that lives down the way from me. And I would hate to see that happen. And so I really appreciate this bill. I appreciate you bringing it forward and shining a light on how we could do better. Thank you.
All right. I don't see any further questions. Lead Nash. I will renew my motion that House File 30. Did you want to have any closing comments? Okay. I'll renew my motion that House File 38, as amended, be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails, and you're on your way to Health, Finance. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
And with that concludes the business that we have before us today. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 12th. Thank you, members, for a great meeting, and we are adjourned.